Women Worldwide with Deirdre Breckenridge introduces incredible stories shared by women across the globe who have experienced the great heights of success and, at times, the agony of defeat. With a vision to impart wisdom and advice on how to tackle barriers and soar to new heights, the show uncovers different perspectives to help you find your inner strength and to power up your own voice so you can excel in life.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Women Worldwide. I'm your host, Deirdre Breckenridge. Thanks for tuning into the show. It's a new year, and there's so much to look forward to. This means you're probably evaluating goals and the impact you want to make in 2018, and not just 2018, but every year after 2018. But reaching goals and creating impact means change. Right. And sometimes I think that's a word that scares people, and rightly so. But change is personal and it's professional. So what are you going to change? Will you be working smarter rather than harder this year? Do you want to be more collaborative with your colleagues? Or maybe you want to be more innovative in your role at your job? And can you do this without adopting a whole new framework? What does it take? Well, my guest today is the perfect person to answer some of these questions around change and flexibility and innovation and your mindset. And she has a lot to say about collaboration. Joining me on the show is Brandi Boatner, who is the social and influencer communications lead for IBM Global Markets. Brandi's been at IBM since 2010, so she celebrated an 8-year anniversary just recently. She's also served as a digital experience manager for IBM Global Technology Services. She's currently the chair of the IBM Black Network of New York Business Resource Group, BRG, and she's a founding member of the IBM Marketing Communications and Citizenship MCC Diversity Council. I could go on and on about Brandi and achievements, but I think it's really important for her to share her story with you. Brandi, it's great to have you on the show. Welcome.
Hi, Deirdre. Thank you so much for having me. I'm very excited to start the new year just as you set it up and just as you said. So again, so great to be here with you. So thank you.
Well, we are so happy to have you here and to power up the new year. I mean, the talk of change and collaboration and innovation, it does get everybody really excited. And we're going to jump into that. But there's one thing that, you know, I want to mention because I read your title and there are so many new titles that are coming out today. So maybe yours is unique, right? Maybe you could just explain what does it mean to be who you are? What are some of your responsibilities?
Well, that's a whole separate conversation. What does it mean to be Brandi? But we'll leave that. No.
I think it would be a lot of fun. That's second segment.
You know, it's like branding with Brandi. What does that mean? No. But you're right. Given the landscape that we live in today, we live in such a digital, such an immediate world, it requires, you know, a new kind of modern communicator that is very comfortable with digital, that is very comfortable with the digital dynamics that go into the traditional principles, you know, of marketing and communications. And so what I do, given this new role, and I know it's a mouthful and you did a great job, what I do in my new role is, as I'm a social and digital communications professional, social media, you know, all the platforms that we use and that we leverage that are so pervasive kind of in our day-to-day lives, from a business standpoint, at a global company like mine, social is different in different countries. It's used differently in different countries. The behavior is different. And now there's this term, and it's funny, I was kind of thinking back to when I first heard the term influencer relations and when influencers really became kind of, you know, table stakes, like you have to have an influencer plan. And then I started looking at, you know, what determines an influencer? Who is an influencer? What's the right influencer? So things like, you know, this question has really emerged, I'd say probably in the last, like I said, 5 years within marketing and communications. So you need someone who who's a modern communicator that understands digital, that understands the dynamics, but that also understands the relationship and the principles about influence and how we're trying to tell our story, whether it's for a brand or for a client. And so that's kind of where this mesh of social and influencer communications lead came from in my current role. But then how do you apply that, as I mentioned, globally, as I'm responsible for about 25 different global markets, and how social and digital communications and influencer relations works in those markets. So is that, does that give you
yes,
a better kind of insight into what I do?
Yes, absolutely. And we all need to be modern communicators. Digital and social
absolutely.
Is a part of our world.
Absolutely.
And you make a very good point about it's different. You can never assume that just because you are using and participating on social media a certain way that it goes across globally to other countries. Your
Correct.
Job sounds fascinating. We've talked, Brandy, in the past, and I'm going to bring up the big buzzy word, agile marketing, right? Because a lot of things that you've even talked about, the way that we change and the way that we think and how we have to collaborate, requires more flexibility and innovation. So for listeners, because we do want to jump into agile, for listeners who maybe aren't familiar, where does this come from and what does it mean?
Yeah, so agile, the term agile, now agile marketing is new, but the term agile is an approach that actually came from the world of software development. The agile methodology, and there are several schools of thought around the agile method, which ones you can use, which ones work better. But in the world of software development, it was used and applied in creating video games. So if you think about a video game, and I don't know if any of the listeners are gamers, I suspect there may be some gamers out there listening, but you know, with a video game, it's very detail-oriented and very strategic as you, the player, are trying to reach a level or, you know, combat something or get to the end or get points or whatever you're trying to do within that game. Someone had to think about if X, then Y, or if you do this, then what happens? And when you get to this level, what takes place or what are you going to win? And in order to do that and to test the right approach in developing this really unique experience for you as the gamer, agile methodology was born. I think it, you know, was a bunch, I think it was like 15 guys that were working on a video game or a piece of software kind of wrote this agile manifesto for the principles and like the methods you should use. Yeah, that's kind of where it came from, this agile manifesto of what they were doing in their software development. And so again, from there, a lot of people in the tech space and in the IT space have been practicing agile. So for us as communicators and marketing and PR, it's like, wait, you want me to use a software development approach?
What?
How do those two things, right? Like, how does that work?
That's challenging.
But it's fun. I like that. I like to say,
that. Absolutely.
Because, yeah.
I was just going to say that even though, so agile starting in software, and you see, you mentioned how it's in the tech space, right? In the IT space, is becoming a part of our world. So that's new in PR and marketing. But anybody listening, you can adopt an agile framework in a sense. I mean, you could do it in anything. Right? That you're doing. You don't have to be in communications. You don't have to be in tech or IT.
That is correct.
And that makes it really powerful because I think in one of our conversations, you gave an example of a friend planning a wedding, right?
Using agile. Mm-hmm.
Right. So, you know, if you do want to use an agile framework, how do you think this empowers people? Like what are they, what business is getting out of it?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. And like I mentioned, you know, using the example, I love to tell people how, you know, a friend said, oh, my dad's an engineer. And he said, if you want me to help you plan this wedding, you really need to use an agile framework, because we can't do all these things that need to be done if it's not done agile, like real time. And, you know, you course correct and you listen and you iterate. And his daughter, at first she was like, what? Wait, what? And then after she implemented the framework, it just became so much more clear. So to your point, any industry or anybody looking to, and this is going to sound crazy, but bear with me, anyone looking to fail fast. Fail fast and embrace that failure so that you can iterate, course correct, and then try again, can apply an agile framework to whatever it is that they're doing. So what it means specifically for communications and how it's empowering, the fundamental thing I say to my colleagues and to those in the industry is an agile framework in communications and marketing really requires you to rewire your brain and rewire kind of some of the built-in processes you just inherently do as a communicator. And it allows you to build some new muscles. And so when you do that, and you're rewiring your thinking, and you're realigning kind of your decision-making process, you're building these new muscles to then turn into something really innovative and creative. And you're like, wait, I never had time to do that before. I just had to hurry up and get this press release out the door. I had to hurry up and pitch this story. And then you're like, wait a minute, I actually did something pretty innovative and really made, you know, a huge difference in what the, you know, the deliverable was or what the outcome was. That's extremely empowering. That's such a gratifying feeling to be able to support this kind of fast moving agile approach to move into something that really allows you to accomplish what you want to accomplish in a different way. And like I said, in giving you kind of new muscles for creativity.
Yeah, it's taking the old way of planning. And this could be personal or professional. Mm-hmm. If you're attacking a plan and you're looking at it over a really long period of time and all the parts, and I think the agile framework is saying, no. You don't look at your planning that way. It's in a lot shorter chunks, let's say, of planning. And you even said it. It's like, listen, iterate, course correct. So that is a different mindset for anybody. You're just changing everything you've ever learned to adopt this new framework. Would you say that that's accurate?
I would. And it really, so what agile and just, you know, having this mindset of agile and then applying this framework, agile really eliminates unnecessary processes. If you think about some of the unnecessary things that go on in the course of your day.
Oh my gosh.
An unnecessary email, an unnecessary phone call. Like, did this really have to happen? If you think about all the unnecessary steps you do in the course of a day for whatever it is that you're doing, imagine if you were able to eliminate that, take away any artificial boundary. Because a lot of the boundaries are constraints that I guess we feel we are held to. Most of them are artificial. You don't need them. You really don't need them. And if you take that away, oh my gosh, you can unleash such potential to collaborate and do so many very cool things if you remove just that unnecessary stuff that you don't need. You don't need
Is that what you have to do first? Just take a look at what is unnecessary? Do you think people can even identify? Like if you're in a big corporation.
No, you cannot. No, it is not counterintuitive. So no, that's not the first step. The first step is, you know, you kind of look at the just like how we do any kind of planning in communications and marketing, look at the plan. But the agile way is you break it down into small, very strategic pieces. They're called in agile and certain school of thought, they're called sprints. The way that I work in Agile, I do my task in 2-week sprints, because 2 weeks, if you think about it, 10 days really gives me time to take a particular task that I've broken down and do it in that 10-day time period. Going into the eliminating the unnecessary process, if I am working on something that I cannot get accomplished in 10 days, literally in 5, yeah. 5 days in the work week, in the next week, why am I exalting more time and I'm not getting the result and I keep doing, like, if I can't do it in 10 days, should I really be doing it? We live in a 3-second world, right? A 3-second right swipe world. If I can't do what I need to get done in 10 days, why am I doing this? Why?
Yeah, exactly.
Do I need to, break it down further? So that's what I'm saying. It's not inherent. People will be like, oh, this is unnecessary. Like, it won't be just like a no-brainer immediately. It really takes you to getting into that, again, that agile mindset and that framework to realize what you don't need.
That's really interesting. So when it, on the flip side, how do you feel mm-hmm. when it does work? When it even works before the 2 weeks are up? What is it? I mean, Brandy, is that like the best feeling ever? And are you? And is everybody celebrating? Because I'm sure it's not just you. Like, is your whole team like, yeah, we did this?
So this is what I'll say about the celebration of my sprints. The sprint is, again, it's how do you accomplish the task at hand? It's never, I find sometimes we just want everything to be perfect and we want like, oh my gosh, I spent 10 days and it's perfect. That's not what I celebrate on practicing Agile, that something's perfect. I've gotten rid of that mindset of this has to be perfect. It does not have to be perfect. There has to be progress made on the task that I'm doing in those 10 days. So I can't say at the end of my sprint, oh my God, this was perfect. I can say at the end of my sprint, the task that I broke down through a series, of actions that I worked on, I made progress and I accomplished it. That is what I celebrate, right? I celebrate progress, not perfection. I don't even celebrate the finished product. I just celebrate that in 10 days, whatever task that I broke down in my sprint, I was able to work on, make progress, have it if I'm able to say, okay, that particular task is done. But with Agile, if you think about it, you're never finished.
Yeah.
You're never finished.
You're not supposed to be. I could see why business leaders and executives would want an Agile framework. From a professional, I think about the teams that I work with. Progress. You want to see progress, not perfection. There is no perfection, but that progress is so important because that alone does a lot for the team and the people. Mm-hmm. That is empowering right there.
It enables your people to quickly respond to their environment. Like, forget this, it takes 6 months. My God, 6 months? Come on.
Yeah, how are you going to possibly,
as a communicator, how are you possibly going to align your business objectives to the consumer or your target audience's need to your brand goals to get your return on investment in 6 months? Dear Lord, that is too much.
But this isn't easy. There's no way. I don't have rose-colored glasses on right now thinking like, oh, yeah, every person who's listening, you go run with this Agile framework, dive in. Because there are some big challenges for organizations. Every organization wants to be innovative, wants to empower mm-hmm. their own mm-hmm. and to be more creative. But what are those challenges?
I mean, there's...
Or is that like a whole other show?
No. I'm an advocate, obviously for the framework, but, I'd say the initial challenge, and I've heard this from other, other colleagues in the industry, not that work with me, but in the industry, is how do I get buy-in, right? I think that's like a really big challenge, is how do I get my leadership team to be like, okay, we're going to move to Agile now. So failing is a good thing. And if something doesn't work, that's awesome. Like, how do I get my leadership team to embrace that? And it's not lost on me that that's an uncomfortable conversation to have. But guess what? Change and comfort can't coexist. So you should be willing to have that uncomfortable conversation in order for you to implement the changes that you need as a professional and then as a business, right? So that's like one of the biggest hurdles is, okay, how do I get buy-in? Then once you get the buy-in, you have to show the results pretty quickly that as a result of taking an agile approach, moving the unnecessary processes, having, you know, your best people spread too thin on too many projects, scheduling a meeting for the meeting to talk about the meeting at the meeting, that doesn't happen in agile. Like once you kind of, you know, get into the groove of the framework and you start applying the methodology, then you show the results. Hey, listen, when we had time to take this idea and to chunk it down into sprints, look at what we came up with, right? Look at what insights, look at how the team was able to come up with this. And we didn't even think about it because we didn't have time before to think about it. We just had to, you know, kind of keep the lights on, as they say. We just had to work on what we work on for the campaign and do what we need to do for the campaign. Imagine once you can show the result of this is what we did when, again, when you were able to unleash the potential, you know, of the team. So I'm not saying, oh, it's just say you're doing agile and it's so super easy. I'm not saying that, but I am advocating that the approach works and it works really well to get the results that you want quicker, faster. Again, and to empower and enable your people.
Well, I think I'm an advocate for agile as well. right? Buy-in, showing results, what you said, change and comfort can't coexist. All really good points. Brandy, I'm going to ask you just to hold your thoughts for a moment. We're going to take a super quick break, give some love to our sponsor. And I also want to mention that Women Worldwide is on the C-Suite Radio Network. You can find our shows at c-suiteradio.com. And while you're there, be sure to check out all of the other great business podcasts as well.
You have been listening to Women Worldwide with your host, Deirdre Breckenridge. Segment 2 is coming right up.
Creating brand loyalty requires a unique blend of strategic communication and innovative technology. Pure Performance Communications works with businesses to move their audiences from awareness to action and impact by offering a digital marketing roadmap. Let us help you foster deeper engagement and forge stronger relationships along the way. Visit us at pureperformancecom.com. That's pureperformancecom with two M's.com.
Now, back to Women Worldwide with your host, Deirdre Breckenridge.
I'm Deirdre Breckenridge. Welcome back to the show. I was just chatting with Brandy Boatner about an agile framework and being more innovative and empowering people to create. And Brandy, you've shared so much really good information. Now I want to kind of pivot more to you. So yeah. Let's talk about Brandy. What does innovation mean to you, either personally or professionally?
Yeah, no, it's a really great question. And I feel like, you know, innovation is such, you know, it's become such a buzzword term. And I've even read articles that, you know, will say things like innovation is dead or, you know, how can anyone innovate in today's world? I mean, just so many different things. And so regardless of the school of thought that you subscribe to, I just believe that innovation is agile. Innovation is creativity. Innovation is inclusiveness. For me, it embodies so many different things that I do both personally and professionally. I don't think it's dead by any means. I think it means different things to different people because you can be very innovative and creative and come up with something
that doesn't work. Just a kind of quirky tidbit. I don't know if you've ever heard of this museum, Deirdre. It's called the Museum of like Failed Inventions.
Oh no, where is the museum?
I think, I don't want to misspeak. I think it's, I don't want to say Ohio. I can't, Minnesota, somewhere.
Gotta look it up. Literally,
it is a museum filled with inventions that didn't make it, that people just didn't take to, wasn't popular, it didn't sell anything. And that was so fascinating to me because I said, I honestly want to go there and see what inventions didn't make it, or, you know, why they didn't make it. But that's still, to me, innovative. Right? I mean, yes. Someone had to come up with these things. And I just think it's so interesting and great that there's a museum dedicated to it. So if you get a chance, you got, maybe Deirdre, you and I can do a Women Worldwide from the Museum of Failed. Right.
Road trip. Women Worldwide road trip with Brandy Boner.
That would be great.
That would be great. So much fun. Well, I appreciate that you too believe that innovation is not dead, because how can it be? I think that there's innovation all around us. I also like that you said that part of what you believe innovation to be has to do with the whole agile and creativity, but also the inclusiveness, you know, having others around you to be a part of it, and how you frame it out together is really good. I think there's so much pressure, Brandy, professionally around, you know, you have to keep up with technology to be innovative, which, you know, in your role and in my role and what we do, you know, you do. So how are you actually keeping up with the pace of technology?
I mean, working at a technology company, I feel like I blink and it changes.
I know.
So, I mean, it's constant. We live in such uncertain times with this warp speed, you know, technological change. So it can be tough at times to keep up with everything that's happening, and particularly with digital technologies and just, you know, all of the things that happen. Ironically enough, today is a day where IBM, we celebrated 25 years of patent leadership, where we have been the leader in the number of technology patents.
That's huge.
Again, for the past 25 years, that is an outstanding accomplishment. But if you think about all the things, talking about the warp speed, what has happened in the last 25 years in technology? I mean, it's crazy. But I really subscribe to the philosophy, if I look at how to keep up with this pace of change, I really believe in slow and steady will win the race. You know, I know that's, you know, a cliche, but that's kind of how I feel, is that with all the changes, with all the technology, again, being agile, slow and steady, you know, keeping the foundations and the principles of what I do and how to differentiate myself professionally and personally, I think is the way to combat that warp speed change.
Yeah, I agree. Slow and steady. You can't jump ship. You have to invest. You're taking the time to do what is actually going to create the progress, right? We talked about progress before. I really think that, you know, slow and steady, there's something to be said about that, even when everything seems like it's crazy around you, right? So that's really good advice. I think I want to play a little game with you.
Oh,
it's going to be so much fun. So this game, Brandy, I'm going to say a word or a group of words, and you just tell me what's on your mind. what do you think of this first?
This will definitely be fun, Deirdre.
Okay. Here's the first one.
Okay.
Must have tech resources.
Smartphone.
Oh, yeah. Brandy, how close is your smartphone to you at any given minute? This isn't a part of the game. This is just Deirdre being curious.
This is going to be, I would say literally not even an arm's length away from me at all times.
Even when you sleep?
Even when I sleep.
Does that interrupt your sleep at all? Do you ever feel like you're going to reach over and grab that smartphone?
It doesn't, because when I do shut down, I do shut down. But I will say, as soon as I open my eyes and I am like, you know, out of like the sleep, I'm pretty conscious, I do reach for my phone. Mm-hmm. And you would think, you know, some people are like, oh, I check my email, or I want to see what happens. The first thing that I do is I look at my Instagram feed.
I love it.
I went to bed last night watching the college football championship between
Alabama and Georgia.
Alabama and Georgia. Yeah. And when it went into overtime, I literally could not stay up any longer. I was like, no, I got to go to sleep. And so when I woke up this morning, I didn't know who won. And that bothered me that I didn't know who won. First thing I did was go on Instagram to see which one of my friends posted.
You can always count on a friend, right?
Who won the game.
Yeah.
Sure enough, I found out. So, I mean, as bad as it is to admit, that's what I do.
That's so interesting, because I guess my smartphone is across the room now. I used to sleep with it by my bed, but not anymore. Mm-hmm. And the first thing that I do, Twitter. I look at Twitter first.
Yeah.
So we all have our ways of finding information. It's really fascinating. Okay, back to the game. Ready? Favorite book or books in 2017?
Emotional Intelligence 2.0. Excellent book by Travis Bradley. Another book that I really liked was a book about Leonardo da Vinci, with some things that I just didn't know about Leonardo da Vinci. I mean, I knew like what I learned in school or like what I read, but Walter Isaacson's wrote a wonderful book about Leonardo da Vinci. That was amazing. And then just given everything that goes on with artificial intelligence, virtual reality, anything from Andrew McAfee, I am addicted to. But in 2017, he and his often writing partner and IBM friend, Eric Benjolfsson, say that three times.
That's hard to say.
wrote the book Machine, Platform, and the Crowd, you know, around harnessing the digital future. Andrew McAfee had written a book many years ago, I think in the early 90s or mid 90s. Around digital disruption. And so now it's just kind of like the next wave and the next wave and the next wave. So those were some of my faves in 2017.
Those are really good. Emotional Intelligence, that was Travis Bradley?
I'm sorry, Travis Bradbury. Right, okay. Emotional Intelligence 2.0.
Okay, I'm going to put that.
Can't stop the 2.0.
I love how you sort of have an emotional intelligence, then you have a Leonardo da Vinci, and then artificial intelligence, kind of like breaking up different parts to feed your soul, right?
That's exactly correct.
That's really good. Okay. Best piece of advice ever.
I mean, that's a tough one, but I really take this to heart, and it's going to sound silly, but bear with me. Best piece of advice came from a very dear friend of mine named Philip Tate. And he said to me, very matter of fact, very friendly as he could, Brandy, life is not all about you.
Thank you, Philip.
And at that moment, I said, I was so offended. Philip, how dare you tell me? Of course everything is all about me. What do you mean? Life, my career, you know, jobs I am seeking. What do you mean it's not all about me? It's the best piece of advice he could have given me.
That's like tough love.
Yeah, right? Yeah. And he did it in such a way. It was just so graceful. I was offended and like about to start crying. I'm like, what are you talking about? But looking back in hindsight, he just couldn't have been more accurate. And that is something I had to learn. It's not, how many people do you know that really thinks that it's all, that think that, oh, this is all about me? How many people do you know in your life that subscribe to that philosophy?
Exactly. That's a really good piece of advice. Do you mind if I ask when that was shared with you?
This was shared with me upon graduation. This was I graduated from college in 2009, and I was in my job search. And if you recall, 2009 was the peak of the financial crisis.
Yes.
So no one was hiring. Nobody was hiring. And I was very discouraged and very like, well, I did everything my parents told me to do. I went to college. I got a degree. I'm in grad school. I got an advanced degree. And now I'm unhirable. Nobody will hire me. And I really internalized, as many of us do, a lot of that rejection, a lot of that self-doubt, a lot of that, you know, I can't apply for this job because nobody wants me. Things are so doom and gloom. I really internalized a lot of that. And he just had to, you know, kind of sit me down and say to me, Brandy, this is not all about you. You do realize there are other things going on with maybe the companies that you're applying for. Have you done the research to see what are the business challenges they're going through in the financial crisis? Maybe it's not a question that they, you know, they don't want you. It just, you know, fiscally, they can't get you. Or, you know, maybe you're worth more than you're selling yourself short. But I had internalized so badly that rejection that I needed someone to give me a swift kick in the pants for me to get out of that.
Well, Philip is a really good friend.
He's a wonderful friend.
And it always has to be framed the right way. And I think that advice is life changing because, you know, I read your bio in the intro, look at what you've done and how you've grown. So I think everybody kind of needs to get that in check, whether a friend says it to you or not. Life is not all about you.
It's not. And it's so easy for us, like I said, to internalize and just make everything seem like it's me. It's me. You tell yourself that. It literally, it's like delusions, right? You tell yourself that. And I told myself that, oh, I'm not getting a job because of this. And I didn't do enough internships and I didn't do enough of my thesis. And I literally made every single thing about me. And he helped me get out of that self-shame spiral.
And to ask different questions.
Definitely. Think about it differently.
There's other information that we probably don't take into consideration if you're in a mindset. But he opened up a way of looking at things differently and to ask more questions so that it's not so internalized and you have a better understanding of really what's going on. Boy, that was a good one. Last one in the game.
Success means growth. Growth. Again, people can define their success differently. You might ask somebody else this in a game and they say success is money. Someone might say success is happiness. Somebody might say, you know, anything. But for me, I would really say success for me is growth.
Yeah. You want to feel like you're growing and learning and being a part of something. So I can definitely relate. Growth and progress.
Yes, exactly.
Right. It goes back to what we were talking before.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Exactly.
Progress, exactly. Not perfection.
Right.
So with everything that goes on and, you know, you mentioned the slow and the steady and the change and the agile, the flexibility, how do you personally handle maybe some of the stresses around you, you know, when life gets challenging?
Yeah, I'm so glad that you asked me this question because it's something that I have really embraced in the last 6-7 months in 2017 is how I handle stress in the day-to-day is I practice mindfulness. And I will admit, I had heard about mindfulness. I have one of my best friends lives in California, and she told me about mindfulness. And I told her, I said, girl, I'm too busy. I can't do any of that. I don't have time to meditate or be mindful. I don't want any part of that. And she's like, no, she's like, I really think that you should try it. And she would encourage me. And I would always just rebel and say, no, 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 I can't do that. I've got too many things going on. And in mid-July, I had my regular kind of doctor checkup because your health is extremely important.
Yes.
And when I went to the doctor, when they do like the before the doctor sees you, they take your blood pressure.
Yes.
And they weigh you. And so the nurse took my blood pressure, and I've never, ever, ever had high blood pressure. And she said, I'm a little worried about your blood pressure.
Oh, no.
It's extremely high. And I said, what? No, do it again. I said, no, no, yeah. No, do it again. Like, that's not right. And so she took it again and same thing.
Uh-oh.
So when the doctor came in to see me, that was the first thing that she said. She said, I know you're here for your checkup, but I am very concerned about your blood pressure. And I said to her, first of all, I'm too young, right? To have high blood pressure. I thought like, get older, you might have high blood pressure. I was like, do young people? And she's like, Brandy, yes, young people have
high. Doesn't matter the age.
Right? And then, she kind of went into how it's a silent killer and hypertension. And really, I got so terrified. I broke down and started crying.
Oh,
and
that's scary.
It was a really kind of awakening moment for me. And honestly, I only shared it with my mom. I was just, really terrified. And I didn't say anything because I definitely didn't want to go back to work and say, guess what, guys, I'm stressed and I've got, and I didn't want to broadcast that. And so I didn't tell anybody. And it just so happened that a colleague of mine from India was in town here in New York City. And I saw him, and he and I had worked together at a number of events, and we were very cordial with one another. And he said, I'm about to lead a session on mindfulness. Would you like to join? And I said to him, I was like, why does everybody keep saying to me about this mindfulness thing? Like, what is this? And I'm telling you, Deidre, I almost did not go. I was like, no, this is like baloney. I'm not doing this. I almost did not go. And another colleague saw he and I talking, and she said, Brandy, are you coming to the mindfulness session?
See, that it was meant to
be. And at that point, I said, yes. Okay. So then I went, and people have different stories around mindfulness. At that moment, I spent about 30 minutes meditating and practicing mindfulness with a group of IBMers. It was led by my colleague from India. And at that moment, it was like a huge weight had been lifted from me. And I decided to practice mindfulness every day. And so under his tutelage, I asked him, to teach me some of the things that he knew. I asked him to show me some techniques. I asked him for books I could read. Again, my best friend in California, she'd given me things, but he really, really is a huge advocate and a teacher of mindfulness. And I can say 7 months later, from last July to January, I no longer have high blood pressure.
Oh, boy.
I practice mindfulness twice a day. I really try and live by non-reactive awareness. My meditation practice is breathing techniques. I do breath. And because of the tutelage of my colleague, he even said to me, and I said, oh, I'm not ready. He said, I think that you should start teaching mindfulness. And I said, are you kidding me? I've only been doing it 6 months. I'm like, I can't teach anybody. I'm still learning myself. And he's like, but that's how others learn as you learn. And so he kind of convinced me that I think I am ready to teach. So I am a huge, huge, huge advocate of mindfulness and non-reactive awareness. I'm a very emotional person. I'm a Scorpio. Take that as, how you will. But very just, oh my God, oh my God. Like I just kind of, and so during the bomb cyclone and traveling during that time and losing luggage and all the crazy things that are going on in New York is people are just up to their wits. Again, I practice non-reactive awareness, so I just don't react to things like that anymore. And I apply that to, you know, my work when things are challenging and how do I tackle obstacles and, you know, when something doesn't go the way that I think it should or, you know, when, just like you said, challenges occur, times get tough. I really go back to my mindfulness teaching and my practices.
That's excellent. Mindfulness really works. And I want to mention you have great friends who really care about you and colleagues too. You know, Brittany, there's so many things that I could ask you, but maybe just some parting advice, kind of wrapping up everything that you've said. What advice can you give to someone who wants to be more innovative, who wants to really make a difference?
Yeah. And I know this is going to sound like a crazy piece of advice, but this is what I would say is to embrace failure, to really embrace failure. There is no one person, no one brand, no one company, no one, you know, no one entity that wakes up and says, I am the model of perfection today. Everything I do is perfect. Everything I touch is perfect. No one person, brand, company, entity can say that. You just can't. That's not realistic. That is not the life we live today. As the world continues to become increasingly more complex, more challenging, you know, more natural disasters, terrorism, all the bad things that happen. In order to achieve the success or the growth or the innovation or the creativity that you want to achieve, you must fail. You have to fail. You have to learn from that failure. You have to change the mistakes. You have to course correct, just like we said in Agile, but in order to reach the goals that you want, again, as a brand, a company, an individual, you must fail to do that.
Great advice. It's a lot about failure and not about perfection. And
not
make people feel more comfortable about failure. So thank you. Thank you so much for sharing that. Maybe just let everyone know where they can find out more about you and IBM.
Sure. So you can find me. I say I am what I share. So you can find me on social media, on Twitter, on LinkedIn, on Instagram. You can email me, bboatner@us.ibm.com. Excuse me. And then to find out more about IBM, you can simply go to ibm.com and see all the wonderful things like our 25th consecutive year leadership patent announcement today and all the great things that are taking place at IBM. You can find that on ibm.com.
Excellent. Brandy, thank you so much for coming on the show, sharing your insights, advice, all about Agile, how it's not perfection. And yes, we can fail. That's so important. So thanks for spending time with us.
No, thank you guys so much. Deirdre, I really appreciate you having me on. I appreciate your audience of listeners, those who follow Women Worldwide. I hope just even a nugget of what I said and based on what you asked is helpful for somebody that's listening. So thank you so much for this opportunity.
Well, thank you, and very helpful. And I also want to thank all of you for tuning into Women Worldwide. Until our next episode, stay focused, energized, and feeling empowered. Thank you.